Hello, my name is John Lawrenson and welcome to this, the final part in a series of four AAT podcasts designed to help you, a member in practice looking to run your own business, realise your goals and aspirations. I'm a financial and professional services advisor with BusinessLink. BusinessLink is a free business advice and support service that can be accessed via regional helplines, the internet and local advisors. In part one of the series, I detail what BusinessLink is all about and how it can help you and, in due course, your clients. In part two, I outline the points you will need to consider to establish whether being self-employed is for you before going on to highlight the way forward from there. Whilst in part three, I brought to the fore what a lot of businessmen and women often overlook when setting up in business, the all-important business plan, before going on to highlight what to include. And so to part four, where I want to look at how you can finance your business as well as taking a brief look at marketing. However, I want to start off by discussing another important aspect to be considered when setting up in business. What form or legal entity is your business going to take? Now, some might assert that this decision should have been made before writing the business plan. Well, I disagree. Why? Well, in my opinion, the form or legal entity the business should take should be driven by the way the owner plans to run the business and not the other way around. For this reason, the business plan should be drawn up and then the most appropriate form or legal entity chosen to service the needs of the business are set out in the plan. The plan can then be amended to detail why the chosen form or legal entity has been adopted. It's a bit like choosing a type of car. The logical place to start is to detail what you want the car to do, and then decide on what type, for example, a saloon or a hatchback, is best suited to that requirement. So, what choices of business form or legal entity are there? Well, there are essentially four, and I will start by discussing not only the one that is the most simplest, but which is the one that is by far the most common way in which new members in practice start to trade, and that is as a sole trader. As I have said, being a sole trader is the simplest way to run a business. It does not require paying any registration fees. The keeping of records and accounts is straightforward, and you get to keep all the profits. However, you are personally liable for any debts that your business runs up, which makes this a risky option for businesses that need a lot of investment. You will need to register as self-employed with and make an annual self-assessment tax return to HM Revenue and Customs. You must also keep records showing your business income and expenses. You will make all the decisions on how to manage your business and raise money for the business out of your own assets and or with loans from banks or other lenders. Any profits you make will go straight to you and, as you will be self-employed, such profits will be taxed as income. In addition, you also need to pay fixed rate class 2 and 4 national insurance contributions on your profits. But remember that as a sole trader, you are personally responsible for any debts run up by your business. This means your home or other assets may be at risk if your business runs into trouble. Now let's look at limited liability companies, and for the purpose of this podcast, I will only consider private limited companies. Limited companies exist in their own right. This means the company's finances are separate from the personal finances of their owners. The owners are known as shareholders, and they may be individuals or other companies. Shareholders are not responsible for the company's debts unless they have given guarantees, on a bank loan for example. However, shareholders may lose the money they have invested in the company if the company fails. Limited companies must be registered at Companies House and have at least one director, who may also be a shareholder. Directors must be at least 16 years of age, and at least one director must be a person. Private companies are not obliged to appoint a company secretary, but if one is appointed, this must be notified to Companies House. A director or board of directors make the management decisions. Finance comes from shareholders, loans, and retained profits. Accounts must be filed with Companies House before the time allowed for filing those accounts in order to avoid a late penalty fee. Accounts must also be audited each year unless the company is exempt. Directors are responsible for notifying Companies House of changes in the structure and management of the business. Profits are usually distributed to shareholders in the form of dividends, apart from profits retained in the business as working capital. If a company has any taxable income or profits, it must tell HM Revenue and Customs that it exists and the company will be liable to pay corporation tax on those profits. Company directors are employees of the company and must pay both income tax and Class 1 national insurance contributions on their salaries. And crucially, Shareholders are not personally responsible for the company's debts, but directors may be asked to give personal guarantees in respect of loans made to the company by, for example, banks. Now let's look at partnerships. Partnerships are often considered as a halfway house between trading as a sole trader and as a limited company. In a partnership, two or more people share the risks, costs, and responsibilities of being in business. Each partner is self-employed and takes a share of the profits. Usually, each partner shares in the decision-making and is personally responsible for any debts that the business runs up. Unlike a limited company, a partnership has no legal existence distinct from the partners themselves. If one of the partners resigns, dies, or goes bankrupt, the partnership must be dissolved, although the business may continue to trade. A partnership is a relatively simple and flexible way for two or more people to own and run a business together, but it's a good idea to draw up a written agreement between the partners. It is important to note that partners do not enjoy any protection if the business fails, and that each partner needs to register as self-employed. Partners themselves usually manage the business, though they can delegate responsibilities to employees. Partners raise money for the business out of their own assets and or with loans. It is possible to have sleeping partners. They will contribute money to the business, but they are not involved in running it. The partnership itself and each individual partner must make annual self-assessment returns to HM Revenue and Customs. The partnership must keep records showing business income and expenses. Each partner takes a share of the profits and is taxed accordingly. Each partner also needs to pay Class 2 and Class 4 national insurance contributions. Importantly, creditors can claim a partner's personal assets to pay off any debts, even those debts caused by other partners. In England, Wales, and Northern Ireland, partners are jointly liable for debts owned by the partnership and so are equally responsible for paying off the whole debt. They are not severally liable, which would mean that each partner would be responsible for paying off the entire debt. Partners in Scotland are both jointly and severally liable. However, in any event, if a partner leaves the partnership, the remaining partners may be liable for the entire debt of the partnership. Also, a creditor may choose to pursue any of the partners for the full debt owed in the case of insolvency. Finally, let's consider limited liability partnerships, or LLPs for short. An LLP is similar to an ordinary partnership, in that a number of individuals or limited companies share in the risks, costs, responsibilities and profits of the business. The difference is that liability is limited to the amount of money they have invested in the business and to any personal guarantees they have given to raise finance. This means that members have some protection if the business runs into trouble. As with a partnership, each member needs to register as self-employed. There must be a minimum of two designated members. The law places extra responsibilities on them. If the LLP reduces in number and there are fewer than two designated members, then every member is deemed to be a designated member. LLPs must register at Companies House, and it's a good idea to draw up a written agreement between the members. Usually the members manage the business, but they can delegate responsibility to employees. Members raise money out of their own assets and or with loans. The LLP itself and each individual member must make annual self-assessment returns to HM Revenue and Customs. All LLPs must file accounts with Companies House. Each member takes an equal share of the profits unless the members' agreement specifies otherwise. Therefore, members of an LLP pay tax and national insurance contributions on their share of the profits. The profits of a member of an LLP are taxable as profits of a trade, profession or vocation, and members remain self-employed and subject to Class 2 and 4 national insurance contributions. So, to recap, the advantages of being a sole trader include independence, ease of setup and running, and the fact that all profits go to you. The disadvantages include a lack of support, unlimited liability, and the fact that you are personally responsible for any debts run up by your business. In the case of a limited liability company, your personal financial risk will be restricted to how much you invest in the business and any guarantees you've given in order to obtain financing. However, you should remember that this type of company also brings a range of extra legal duties, including the maintenance of the company's public records, for example, for the purpose of the filing of the accounts. The advantage of being in a partnership include its ease of setup and running and the range of skills and experience that the partners can bring to the business. On the other hand, problems can occur when there are disagreements between the partners. There is unlimited liability, and as a partner, you are personally responsible for any debts that the business runs up. LLPs retain the flexibility of a partnership and have the advantage that your personal liability is limited. The formation of an LLP is more complex and costly than that of a partnership, and problems can occur when there are disagreements between the members. All very complex, I'm sure you will agree. However, don't worry if you are unsure as to which way to go. BusinessLink's website has a simple interactive tool that is purposefully designed to help you find which form or legal entity is right for your business. Now I want to discuss raising finance for your business. Having drawn up a business plan and associated projections, and having remembered to include your own salary, you will know how much startup capital and ongoing working capital you will need. The funding will normally come from your own or family funds, borrowed funds, grant aid. Let's look at each in more detail. Your own funds. This is the easiest and cheapest solution. Whether borrowed or from savings, such funds are usually considered as capital and not borrowed capital. If using your own savings, keep back enough to cover at least 3 months' drawings as reserve for emergency. If you're increasing your mortgage borrowing or your reliance on credit card debt, remember to include the increased servicing costs in your projections. Now let's have a look at borrowing from family. Whether as a gift or a loan, such funding is very rarely considered as borrowed capital by financial institutions. Borrowing in this way can be very flexible if things get sticky. Interest, if being charged, is usually easily waived, and capital repayment holidays are easy to agree. But make sure that your family doesn't lend you more than they can afford to lose. And strongly consider putting a formal written agreement in place. This can save so much heartache in the long run. Finally, let's look at borrowing as a business from financial institutions. It is important to understand that the so-called credit crunch has had an impact on banks' appetite to lend monies, but that they are all keen to lend. Just a few pointers. Regardless of the amount sought, a robust business plan will be required. Ensure that any capital borrowing requirements, for example, to purchase computers or vehicles, are funded by a loan which is repayable over a term that is in line with the life of the asset, and that working capital, in other words, day-to-day funding, is funded by an overdraft. Do be prepared to discuss security if looking for more than £10,000 to £15,000, and also be prepared to discuss alternate funding solutions. It may well be that a bank manager will want to suggest something that would be more appropriate from the bank's point of view than you would be happy with, and therefore be prepared to say, thanks, but no thanks. An alternate source of funding may be through grant aid or government assistance. As a lot of grant aid is sector or location specific, a meeting with a BusinessLink advisor is a must. Be realistic. General use grants are increasingly rare, but there is still a good deal of non-financial aid out there, as well as targeted or match-funded finance for things like training and mentoring. Schemes such as the Enterprise Finance Guarantee Scheme, which is there to support applications to banks that are worthy of support but short of security, and soft loans to fund applications that the banks have declined, are examples of where the government assists startup businesses. Moving on, let's have another look at marketing. We first considered marketing as part of putting your business plan together, but it is much more than that. Whilst the business plan will have outlined a marketing strategy, marketing must be integral and an ongoing part of the business. For example, constantly review your competitors' offerings and consider how they impact on your business and how to respond. Ask your existing clients what they want and consider if you want to match their additional needs. Review key dates, for example, the tax year end, return deadlines, budget dates, and plan to include these in marketing opportunities. And regularly review marketing material. You must keep it up to date, especially your website. Use networking events to keep up to date with changes within your profession, training issues, and delivery and marketing methods. Use your BusinessLink advisor and BusinessLink's website as a networking tool to keep you up to date with the wider picture. Join networking groups, real and virtual, aimed at increasing client numbers. Consider electronic marketing tools such as a website and email shots. But whatever you do, you must monitor results. So there you have it. You are now all set to consider whether being self-employed is for you, and if you think it is, how you can take your goals and aspirations forward. Remember, there is a lot of help out there, both in the real and virtual worlds, not least from BusinessLink and AAT. In drawing these series of AAT podcasts to a close, I just want to share a few last thoughts with you. Remember, fail to plan means you are planning to fail. Go through the pre-start planning stage over and over again to make sure it is right for you. Don't be frightened to admit that being self-employed and all that comes with it is not right for you if it isn't. And don't forget, to be a success, a good business plan has to be well implemented and closely monitored. I really hope that you found these AAT podcasts helpful and that you feel that you want to take the next steps in forming your business. Either way, please accept my very best wishes for your future success, and good luck.